you make that face again?
The beaker face?
You look like what the fuck? And I don't mean that from like the British, like, insulting way.
Well, you know my Muppet face story, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, welcome to Tear Gas and Gumdrops, the podcast dedicated to helping people in ministry and mission bring scriptural truths and theological ideals into the complex world of day-to-day life. I'm Chris Morton, coming to you from Austin, Texas.
I'm Kyle Sapp, coming to you from Antioch, California.
Well, let's go. So,
sound like a radio.
Yeah, sounds like a radio. And looks like a Muppet. So, Kyle, we've been trying to record for weeks and weeks. What have you been doing all summer?
You know, youth ministry stuff, camps, went to Honduras, and we build houses and we feed people. And that's been me. How about you? What have you been up to?
Just planting a church and traveling the world. No big deal.
Wait, what do you mean traveling the world? Did you leave the...
Well, I came to see you.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't count as the world. That's the United States.
It's pretty far.
Classic American mindset.
Yeah. Well, this is our third episode, and we've had fun, and hopefully we'll be able to do it consistently now that crazy youth ministry summer is over. You know, lots of big news going on these last few weeks, and we won't spend a lot of time on this. Maybe another episode we can talk about depression-related issues. But I want to hear from you, Kyle. What is your all-time favorite Robin Williams movie or moment?
It's got to be Hook, right?
Oof. Oh, yeah.
Probably, yeah. Hook has got to be my favorite Robin Williams movie. But I really enjoyed, and I think it's underrated, Jack.
I've never seen Jack.
It's like reverse Benjamin Button.
Okay.
And I don't recall it getting a lot of, like, you don't hear a lot of people talking about it.
Right.
But in the movie, he plays this kid who, it's a real disease, too. Mm-hmm. It's the one where, you age too quickly.
Yeah.
Like your body does. And so he's like this 12-year-old in the size of a 40-year-old man's body. And I think J-Lo's in it. I think she plays J-Lo. She plays his elementary school teacher.
All right, I have to see this.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
It's got Ashley Judd. She plays the mom.
Yeah.
It's good. Also, oh my goodness, like the super serious Robin Williams movie.
Good Will Hunting?
No, I haven't finished that yet. My wife started watching it.
You're talking about the teaching one, Dead Poets Society.
No. That's also got to be up there. No, the one with Cuba Gooding Jr., and he goes into, like, paintings, he dies.
Oh, that's What Dreams May Come?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen it. Is it?
I liked it.
I'll have to check it
out. I mean, to say what is your favorite Robin Williams movie is an impossible question to answer.
Right. I think it's interesting that you went to Hook, because I went there too. But, like, Hook is probably the movie where he actually plays the straight man. You know, I was thinking about it, and for the bulk of the movie, he's not in a comedic role.
Yeah.
He's your, like, stereotypical, you know, straight man where everyone else is goofy. And anyway, I just thought, man, for a comedian, that's kind of, you know, so many people's favorite was him actually just kind of being himself, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, and it was Peter Pan, not Lane.
Right, okay. Which is hard to do.
Yeah, and so many good characters, so many memorable moments. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still sometimes, when I score a basketball shot, like, Rufy,
Yeah, every time.
You know, the five times I've done that in my life.
And all the times that we play basketball.
No, we're basketball.
Well, sport ball.
Sport ball.
Yeah. Well, last episode we did an interview with you, just kind of hearing about your philosophy of youth ministry and how you got there. And so, rumor has it, you're turning the mic. What's that?
I hear your mother really enjoyed it.
She did. My mom has a deep love for teenagers, and so she's glad that you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay, so let's interview Chris.
All right.
Everybody's favorite human Muppet.
If there's a video version of this podcast, people will see the Muppet face.
Yeah, we should make a video. Okay. Your mother will buy that one DVD we make of this.
Awesome.
Okay, so I guess the first question, and it's a pretty basic one, is just, why don't you tell us your story? How did you get here and all of that?
Yeah, well, so here is Austin, Texas, and I am a community developer at Austin Mustard Seed. That's my kind of part of my ministry that I do here. And then I also do a lot of online marketing stuff around content marketing and social media, but also mostly with ministries and nonprofits and things like that. How I got here is, long story short, it probably starts with something that I can't really explain, but even when I was a little kid, I always felt a desire and a burden to invite people to church. Like, I remember this poor kid that, like, I would call him, I think we were like 8 or 9 years old, and I'd call him every Saturday night to make sure we could come and pick him up for church the next Sunday. You know, it's just always like, for whatever reason, I always had that burden that, like, there are people who need this. Like, church is where God is doing stuff and people need to be there. And so that's like my oldest memory of caring about that stuff. But fast forward to when I met you in college, a couple of things happened, and I don't want to throw anyone under the bus or anything, but I basically, you know, I grew up in Colorado, which is a lot more post-Christian, post-Christendom than a lot of places in the U.S. And then I went to school in the Bible Belt, where everybody just went to church because they went to church.
Hold on. Everyone's a bit of a broad generalization.
Compared, I mean, now that you've been out in California, you know, comparatively, church is a lot more common thing in the South than it is in other places.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But really what bothered me about that was that there was all this energy and resources and honestly even money around just kind of being thrown around and lost in these churches that seemed to just kind of be some of the things they were doing. Some of the things they were doing was great, and some of the things they were doing seemed to be really, I guess, self-gratifying. Like, I didn't really understand how it was for God. It seemed for themselves. And I just kept thinking of all of my friends back in Colorado and thinking, I don't see how they would ever fit in these congregations. I don't see how there would be a place for them. And so that really started to bother me in college. And about that time, had a mentor come into my life at the same college. So I don't want to throw this college under the bus, because a mentor come into my life, and he just looked at me, and I was 19 years old and kind of a mess in a lot of ways. And he said to me, basically, Chris, I think that, you know, the answer to what you're talking about is planting new churches in these places, and I think you're the guy to do it. And so that, you know, just kind of inspired me that, like, yeah, there was a way to reach these people, and the fact that someone else would call that out in me, you know, like, point that out, like, hey, I think there's this thing, and I think you'd be good at it, like, that really kind of pushed me on this trajectory. So I started just kind of asking myself, okay, what do I need to do, or what do I want to do, and what kind of experience do I need to get to be there? And I can tell a lot of interesting to me at least, a lot of my stories about that. But over time, I kind of came to believe, you know, I need to be in a city. I need to be working with urban people, whether they be the urban poor or kind of the urban creative edge. Like, that's what I got most excited about. And I wanted to be in a place where I could do that. So my senior year of college, I started looking around for where I could do that. And I found out about a church in Atlanta that was a biracial church. So they had about, I guess, you know, it's probably a you know, it'd be a large church except that we live in giga church world now, not just mega church. So, you know, it'd be a large church, but it wasn't a mega church, but it was a very large church. And they had, it had been a mostly white suburban church that found out about some needs in their neighborhood and made a real active effort to reach out across boundaries and across racial boundaries. And that had, that process had started about 5 years before I heard of them. And by the time that I came across them, they were a more or less completely biracial church. Atlanta is a city of about 60% white, 40% black. And this church pretty much represented that. And I wanted to learn from that. So I literally like called the pastor up there and said, "Hey, what's it going to take to be a part of a church like yours someday?" And he said, "I don't know, send me a resume." And I ended up spending about a year and a half just kind of learning from them, and seeing like, man, just all the difficulties, but all the excitement of trying to bring different groups together. And so that really encouraged me. But, you know, like I said before, really what was driving me all this time was this desire to be involved in church planting. So I found out about this church plant that was happening in Austin, Texas. And I don't know if you know this, Kyle, but there's actually a history of angst between Coloradans and Texans.
Like, isn't that true for, like, everyone in Texans?
I can only speak for Coloradans, so I'll let you. But, yeah. Anyway, I had literally sworn ever since I was a kid, I will never live in Texas. But then I started doing some research and found out about Austin, that it had been, you know, it was known as the live music capital of the world, that it had this crazy history of like where the cowboys met the hippies. And it had this super unique, kind of super artistic, quirky background. And of course it's well known now, but you know, it's known for this keep Austin weird mindset where people, you know, paint their cars pink and glue all of their children's action figures to their cars, or, you know, turn their backyards into cathedrals made out of old people's trash, and, you know, just hippies are walking around and with their hippiness. And so that, so, what's that?
I would say that Austin is the Chris Morton of Texas.
I mean, that's, I immediately felt like, you know, this, you know, this is a place that I could just be myself. And that there was a struggle that I was having that I kept looking at, and this is going to go to one of your questions here in a minute, but I kept looking at all of these other churches and all these places that, you know, you could get a job basically as a 22-year-old guy that wanted to work with churches. And they just seemed like such a stretch for me personally. Like, I just didn't feel like I'd fit. And I looked at Austin and I was like, oh, this is home. So I had heard about this church plant and that they were going to focus on kind of this hippie neighborhood in Austin. I said, count me in. And when my time in Atlanta ended, I packed up my car. Right before I left, someone handed me my first ever Sufjan Stevens CD. So I had made the 20-hour drive from Atlanta to Austin listening to nothing but Johnny Cash and Sufjan Stevens. And it was this real emotional transition. So I'm just crying, listening to Johnny and Sufjan for about 20 hours and arrive in Austin. And of course, you know, it's Austin in the middle of August, so it's 110 degrees. And that was my greeting. I went out to dinner with some people from the church plant that night. And I one thing I remember clearly from that dinner is we were sitting, most restaurants in Austin have most of their seating outside, and we were sitting on this bench underneath a tree, and the guy next to me got pooped on 8 times and decided to leave. So that was my first night in Austin. Like, yeah, you know, it's 110 and the birds poop on you. But, you know, long story short, there was a lot going on in churches those days. A lot of people were really excited about like the emergent conversation and other things like that. And so there was this like a lot of energy around trying different things and being outside the box. And we're not going to be your mama's church plant.
BT Dubs, you're not your mom's church plant or your grandma's church plant because they didn't have those back then.
Right. Well, they did. They just, well, I don't know if they did or not. That's part of the problem. Yeah. So anyway, I got here and yeah, there was a lot of kind of angsty energy in church plant world back then. A lot of deconstructionism for its own sake, like, and a lot of negativity and cynicism. And I don't think that, you know, I don't want to speak poorly about anyone, but basically the church plant that I moved to Austin to be a part of, it didn't work out for a lot of reasons. So I spent about 9 months as a part of it, and I just never could get any traction. And that church plant did continue on for a number of years. I know that a lot of people that were involved in it found it a really powerful and shaping experience of Christian community. But it wasn't the right fit for me. And so I found an opportunity in San Antonio. It's just about an hour away. And I didn't really know. It was like I needed a job. And so it was with a mega church that will remain unnamed in San Antonio. And so they were trying to establish multi-site. And so I thought, well, you know, multi-site can't be that different than church planting. And at least you're doing something entrepreneurial and trying different things. And so count me in. So I scratched and begged and pleaded till they gave me a job. And I moved about an hour south of Austin to San Antonio to work there. And I was there for about 2 years. And long story short, you know, 24-year-old Chris just really wasn't up for that kind of professional job. And it was really difficult couple of years for me. And I'm sure it was difficult for everyone around me. And part of what made it difficult was also that I really wanted to be in Austin. I really wanted to be church planting. And I was kind of helping this machine that I was having a real hard time. Again, like I talked about with college, I just had a real hard time seeing what it had to do with the kingdom of God and the way of Jesus, and felt like I was just kind of helping this religious program around. So when that job didn't work out anymore, I decided I was just going to move back to Austin and figure out how to make things work. So I moved back. That was 2009. And part of why I decided to come back to Austin is I came across a church called Vox Vineyard. And Vox was a church of mostly second-generation Chinese and Asian immigrants, 17, 18-year-old kids that had all met at the UT campus. And they decided to move to East Austin, which was a formerly African-American, now mostly Hispanic, very poor side of town. So 15 Asian families moved into the wrong side of town. And they took over a former after hours BYOB male strip club. they literally swept the needles off the floor and turned it into a community center where their church meets.
They leave like the poles up and everything.
The poles were kind of needed to support the ceiling, so.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was amazing. And they, like, I'd love to tell their story some other time. That was a really incredible church. But, you know, I had come across them, and I had lunch with their pastor as I was considering moving to Austin. And he said to me, he's like, here's what you do. You go home and you throw away all your Christian magazines and all your Christian CDs, and you unsubscribe from all your blogs and move into the neighborhood here with us. And in a year or two, we'll talk about church planting. And at the time, I was like, no, I'm awesome. I can do all the things, and I should be in charge. But, you know, I did also kind of see in this other person in this church, like, something that I wanted to be a part of. So I kind of just moved back to Austin, got the first job I could at the Apple Store, and I enrolled in seminary at Fuller, which is our mutual alma mater. You and I have gone to the same school twice now, sort of.
kind of.
And so, yeah, I got super involved with Vox, and I moved into East Austin with them. And while I was there, you know, just had this really great season of kind of healing and putting myself back together after kind of a series of failures. But, you know, for whatever reason, again, maybe this is calling or maybe it's stubbornness, who knows, but I just couldn't get the church planting stuff out of me. Like, I just kept thinking, man, this church is great and Austin needs 20 more like it. And so I tracked down, or I just got involved with all the church planters I could while I was here and tried to help them out any way I could. Along the way, I made a friend named John, and John wanted to plant a church and really liked Vox also. So about a year and a half ago, had a conversation with John and with the team at Vox, and they were just like, you know, we're really focused on our neighborhood. We really like being a mid-sized church of about 200. We don't think we can do what God's calling us to do if we get bigger. So why don't we send you and John out and whoever will go with you. And you guys try to do it in that neighborhood. And so that was last October. So we're about to come up on our 1 year anniversary. And so my role there, John kind of made this joke when we first started talking about working together, where he said, you know, really, Chris, what I see in you is that you could be our cruise director. And the idea with that was just, you know, somebody to help build community. I was like, well, I like cruise director, but people might take it seriously. Why don't we just call it community developer? And so that's why I refer to myself as a community developer at Austin Mustard Seed. Fact is, it's about 60-70% party organizing. You know, in time, now that we kind of have some momentum and we kind of have a sense of community, we're trying to infuse into that a sense of being a discipling community. So hopefully it'll be more than just party planning. But that is a big part of it. That's how I got here.
Okay. So the question I've always kind of had with you, and I don't think I've ever actually heard your answer, and I'm not sure I've ever really asked it, is in a world, I need to ask this question in a way that doesn't sound like a bad movie trailer.
In a world.
With all the studies, with all the statistics out there that talk about the failing American church and how churches are closing their doors by the hundreds every year and all that just general sad church news. Why do you choose church planting new churches over, say, revitalizing an existing
church? So I will give you my current answer that 32-year-old Chris gives. And then I'll give you some more cynical answers I probably would have given in the past. So 32-year-old Chris, I will say this. I think it is vital for the American and the Western church in general to recapture a sense of entrepreneurism, or to use more biblical language, a sense that the church is apostolic, and that word apostolic just means sent, and that we're always going to the next people group or going to the next generation. And we do that because we have a God who sent Abraham, who sent prophets, who sent Jesus, who sent Paul to start churches, and that is our story as our people. And I think so that's like the kind of theological side of it. I think that's what we have to do, is we always have to be saying, how are we sent in this time and place, or to this time and place, and what's that look like? I think personally, and you mentioned this when you actually visited Mustard Seed, which is like, I think part of the reason my story is about all of these different places I didn't really fit is because what gets me excited is doing something new and reaching new people and getting those people plugged in and involved. And most of the Western church isn't about that. Most of the Western church is about sustaining existing systems. And so there's a part of it that was just kind of a personality thing. Like, if I'm going to do church stuff, that's what I want to do. We actually have on our schedule to do a whole episode on why are you still in church, period. Which is, so I won't go, you know, into that too much. But yeah, as far as revitalizing, so my serious answer is I just don't feel like that's my calling. My calling is to do new things. My more cynical answer that I was a lot more apt to give you probably 5 or 10 years ago is I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. There's a church in your neck of the woods, out in the Bay Area. And I remember when I was a senior in college that a handful of us took a trip out to that city in the Bay Area to visit this church. And basically, we visited because in our initial communications, they said, we're looking for some kids to hand the keys over to. And we got there, and what we saw was about a dozen gray-haired people that they didn't want to be sent. They didn't want to figure out how to be church in that time and place. They just kind of wanted an infusion. They wanted young blood and I'm sorry, this is so cynical. Maybe the young blood's money that comes with it to keep doing what they had always been doing. Mm-hmm. And there's just, again, to go back to my story earlier, my heart just for the people who aren't already a part of the church. Like, and what does it take that is still faithful to, the church as Christ set it up, but it is different for this time and place. And there are churches, that have been able to make the turn, make the sacrifice and reimagine themselves, but I just don't see it a lot, and I kind of don't have the patience. Like, I just want to do it. I'm just ready to go. And I think there are some really, again, this is where different callings come out. I think God has given the church pastors, and there are people with that really pastoral bent who want to help shift the hearts of an existing church, and that's great. But my heart is so much more in let's just go, let's just do it, let's just try something new. We don't have time to waste. And if, you know, now it's not that I don't want to see those churches revitalized, but because I actually think that it can and will happen, but it'll happen because they've seen something, because they've seen other people who have blazed the trail, and they've been inspired by people doing something differently. So, again, I really do think that some of these churches can make the turn and it can make the change. And I hope that by trying something new to inspire them and be a resource to them down the road.
Okay. That's a great answer.
I hope that doesn't sound too cynical.
No, you've gotten less cynical over the years. I think I've actually gotten more cynical over the years.
A little bit.
Yeah, it's okay.
I've also gotten better looking.
Well, that's more your girlfriend than you. I mean, let's just be honest. How many things are you wearing right now that she picked out for you?
All of them.
Mm-hmm.
All the things.
All the things. Even my head. without going into any great detail, mm-hmm. I guess you can go into whatever detail you want, but maybe avoid throwing people under buses,
yeah,
metaphorical or literal. Your story has a lot of rise and a lot of falls, probably yeah. more falls than rises. Yeah. And so how did you keep going in light of what you could probably call some pretty epic failures. How did you find the fortitude, the drive, the creativity, you know, whatever you want to call it, to keep saying, you know what, this isn't God telling me to stop. This is just a bump in the road, right. And this is something I'm learning. So what did you do?
Yeah, I would say the first thing was I had a mentor back early in my story when I was in Atlanta who looked at me and said, Chris, we think you're great. We also think you're really broken. Why don't we help get you some help? And they got me into counseling. So I, that was one of the first things that helped a lot, was that I started learning, and I'm still learning this, but I started learning kind of how to separate my current situation from my sense of self-worth. And so I didn't realize it at the time, but I kind of started to learn in a really healthy way, some healthy sense of detachment there. So that was one thing. Another thing was I just have a deep love and belief in, to use some big seminary words, the ontological church. The idea of what the church can be is what gets me excited.
Okay.
The idea of what the church is in eternity, what it stands for, what we're a part of, what we're creating in this community, being the body of Christ in this weird mystical way. I think maybe it was Bonhoeffer that talks about, in the same way that that Christ was fully human and fully divine, that the church is fully human and fully divine because it's the body of Christ. Yeah, and that's like, you're like, ooh, I don't know if I believe that, but I don't know. When Paul talks about the body of Christ, maybe that's what it means. Anyway, I've just always had a real passion for that, and I've just kind of looked at some of these failures and some of the systems I've been a part of, and just maybe smugly, maybe in my youth and smugness, just said, you know, this, I'm failing your system, but your system has nothing to do with the gospel of Jesus Christ, or little to do with it. And so I've been able to kind of separate from that. I also, like, I really want to be the best version of Chris Morton that I can. Like, I really always want to be growing and improving. And I mean, I probably read like two self-help books a month, you know, and I'm always thinking about how can we, you know, how can I actively choose things that Jesus said to do and actually do them. And so when, you know, those moments came, I think even when I was like really in a dark place and really depressed, I also saw like places that I needed to grow. And I've tried to make that more of a priority than just feeling sorry for myself and giving up. And then the last thing I would just say, like, I hate to say this because it's kind of cliche, but one thing that you hear in church planting world is you'll hear people say, don't plant a church unless you can do nothing else. And I think, and maybe the same is true of youth ministry, you'll have to tell me, but there's a part of me that does kind of feel that way, like, this is the thing that I get excited about even on my worst days. And this is the thing that I want to put my energy towards. So yeah, those things have always kind of driven me, and I've had some really dark times, and you know, I'm no stranger to failure or depression, but that idea of what the church can be and that idea that God's not done with me has kept driving me.
So I have a question that I thought of while you were speaking.
Yeah, speak.
So, and you know, maybe this is a podcast separate in and of itself.
Sure.
But you talked about working for a biracial church,
right?
And in light of all the things that are happening in Ferguson,
yeah,
right now. Which just a plug on. Have you seen John Oliver's?
Not yet. No.
On YouTube. I mean, it's from his show. I don't know how accurate it is, but I think he makes some really good points in there. And he also just does it in a really creative and entertaining way.
Yeah. I have to watch it.
His episode on the prison system, where he ended with a Sesame Street sing-along about prisons and their struggle. the guys, say what you will about his beliefs and his policies about things, but man... he's just a brilliant dude. But anyway,
yeah.
So how do you, or have you started trying, have you gotten to that point, or is it even on your radar? How do you apply some of the things that you learned in terms of being a biracial church to your church plan?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So that's a hard question. Because I don't want to sound like I have this figured out. And to be honest, the neighborhood that our current church plant's focused on is a pretty monocultural neighborhood. So it may never happen there. But first off, you have to start theologically. And we just, as a church, we just spent our entire year in Ephesians. And Ephesians is all about tearing down the walls between different people groups and stuff like that. So you do really have to start with the theology that this is the expectation. It starts with Jesus granting people who were not Jews his attention. He was super focused on the Jews, but he gave them their attention and sometimes lauded them more than everyone else. So that trajectory is there in Jesus, to the point that when Paul is planting churches, he sees it as his primary mission, really, is to spread the blessing of Abraham all across. So you have to start with an understanding that this is core to who we are. But I think what the core is not so much breaking down racial boundaries, so much as it is recognizing that in Christ, we're all the same. Mm. And so I'm a big fan of the power of empathy, the idea of the power of empathy. And I think what I learned being a part of the church in Atlanta, and also, you know, our church in East Austin, you know, being in a neighborhood where, you know, I didn't look like most of the neighbors. I think just you need to take the time to shut up and hear someone else's story. So one thing that Fox did when they took over that space is they didn't meet in it for almost a year. They cleaned it up, and then once it was cleaned up, they started hosting community events there where they would just listen and ask the community what they thought they needed. So they created a forum to hear from people there. And there had been, you know, very similar to Ferguson, the reason that building got shut down was because a cop shot a kid, an African-American kid there. Mm-hmm. And in that very space that became their church building and community center. So, yeah, you got to start with empathy. You got to start with just listening. And so as far as the racial thing goes, I would say it's not even a racial thing. It's like, I want to know who you are because we're all in Christ. And by knowing who you are, I know who we are. And I know what it means that, man, God would redeem all of us, that Jesus came for all of us. And so it really is just a matter of listening and trying to hear someone else's story. And in that, you've just got to understand, or just you've got to go in with a posture that, like, I don't know what it's like to be a black man. Or, you know, I don't know what it's like to be a woman. And so rather than showing up and telling you how to get your shit together or how to get your life together, I'm going to go in there and just listen and say, man, tell me what it's like. Tell me what it's like, and what do you think maybe that that Jesus wants to redeem in that? I don't know if that answers your question.
No, I think it's good. I mean, it's a good starting point, at least.
Well, and I think it's also an end unto itself. I think there's something really transformative about being open and hearing someone else's story, because it makes you aware of your own. It makes you aware of what Jesus is up to.
Yeah. Well, those are good. Those are some good conversations there. And seriously, we probably should consider having a longer podcast on that topic. Yeah. I don't know if I have an answer. Like there were a few. It's like, I don't know, 6 years ago or something. It's something super long. Mm-hmm. We had some conversations with a church that was African American about blending. And it didn't work out for a myriad of reasons.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that I learned in that moment is that it's not as simple as I thought it would be. It's not a like, hey, you're a black church, you're an Asian church, I'm a white church, you know, let's just get together. And, you know, the culture, the worldview, it's different. And, and not in a bad way, and I think in a good way, but it doesn't easily mesh. And which makes me notice, you know, you talked about how Ephesians is all about breaking down walls. Well, you know, how much of the New Testament was written in light of the ethnically different cultures that we're combining?
Yeah.
And just how challenging all of that really is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're probably more familiar with this, but like I've read that Romans is all about that. There's one theory that Romans was written when the Jews were allowed to return to Rome, so the church had started, and then the Roman Empire drove the Jews out of Rome. The churches became completely Gentile. And then finally the restriction was lifted, Jews came back, and the book of Romans has this hypothetical backstory that Paul's trying to teach them how to get along. And I think to a greater or lesser extent, probably a lot of the New Testament is written in that light.
Sure, yeah. I mean, Corinthians, a lot has the head covering conversation, the meat section, idol conversation. Just the different teachers conversation, Galatians, obviously, Colossians, Philippians. Mm-hmm. I've read a theory that Philippians is basically written, maybe this isn't the main point, but one of the driving emphasis is to get those two women back together and talking.
Wow.
That the end of chapter 4, Syntyche and what's her name?
Yeah.
Which I'm sure her name is not Syntyche.
Yeah. Who knows? I don't speak Greek.
You could just pick up a Bible and look around.
Yeah, like, so...
buddy.
I think that's what we got to figure out.
It's kind of the driving principle. I mean, we know this already. The driving principle of the New Testament is reconciliation, and that's...
Exactly. Exactly. And I think when you look at the stories of where that's really happening, you know, you look at South Africa or something like that, or Rwanda, what you see is people sharing their stories with each other. And then learning to forgive. And so, yeah, you're right. No, reconciliation is the center. And it is complicated. And I think you're right. Like, I don't think that it's all like we're all going to be one racially blind, like a monochrome rainbow. I think there will always be, you know, different vocations and different callings. I think God calls churches in the same ways that he calls individuals. It's different to your time and place. But we still have to know those stories. We still, like, ignorance is not an excuse.
No. So that sounds good. Yeah.
Well, thanks for asking my story.
Hey, it's what it is. You also told me to, so.
Yeah.
Thank me for wanting to talk about me.
Oh. Well, so what are you doing the rest of your weekend? Or it's starting. We're recording on Friday afternoon.
Let's see. Tonight.
You said you're going to movies?
I wanted to see The Giver with my wife's wife. We talk about a monochrome society. That's a lot about what that society becomes.
Cool. Well, next time we'll have to get your thoughts on The Giver.
Yeah, I think I don't know if I misinterpreted it when I was in sixth grade, but when I just finished it, like, the other night, I looked at my wife, I was like, this book had a really dark ending. Like, I don't remember it being this sad. So, we'll see.
Yeah. Awesome. Right, so, this is, I don't know, how do we end this? This is Chris Morton with tear gas and gumdrops signing off.
That sounds good. I would end with the question. Signing off.
Signing off. All right. I'll see you soon, and I'll talk to you guys later, Mom and Dad.
That's the way the cookie crumbles.
That's the way. San Diego.
Rufy. Oh.